Good morning and welcome to WNHHFM's Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. State Senator George Logan makes our communities tick from the Valley to Hamden, all the way to Hartford. George is a native of New Haven's Hill neighborhood. He represents the 17th State Senate District, and he's gearing up as well for a rematch from the nail biter of an election of 2018. George is here in the WNHH studio to update us on all he's been up to, which is a lot. And he brought his axe, which he's plugging in right now. At the end of this show, he's going to give us a taste of his pyrotechnic guitar playing skills. Well, how you doing, Senator Logan? Thanks for stopping by.
Doing well, Paul. How are you doing today?
Good, and thanks for Yale New Haven Hospital for providing support for today's program. So you've been, before we get to politics, you've been gigging much these days? You've been playing the Toads with your Jimi Hendrix tribute band?
Yeah, well, you know, I love music. It's my serious hobby. My brother's a bass player. My old college friend's a drummer. But we play probably about once every couple months, you know, enough to consider myself still a player. But
And is your, well, you're always a player. The question is music. Do you play only out as Jimi Hendrix tribute, or you do other kind of gigs too?
Yeah, just mainly with the Hendrix cover band. You know, locally, when you play out here, folks like to hear songs they're familiar with. So I stick with the Hendrix, but I sneak in one or two original songs every gig.
That's and what mode do you write in?
Well, they're all different, you know, because I like the blues rock, but I also like acoustic and folk music, and I even do a little reggae as well.
Oh, okay.
I'm even working on an original music album that's going to come out later this year.
Oh, that's good. And are there themes of songs like Steve Mendick, who's involved in politics? He has a lot of political songs when he has a side gig as a musician. Are your songs political, or do you reach for something else when you're writing?
Yeah, I've been writing for years, you know, and I'm new to politics, so I don't really write any political songs. I must say, though, the last couple songs I wrote, I wouldn't call them political per se, but they had more patriotic theme to it. Kind of.
But they're not like no tolls and no taxes.
No, nothing like that. Nothing like that, no.
All right. Well, George, let's say about 5 minutes or less. Okay. So, George, you're going to rematch this year against George Cabrera, a Democrat. You're a Republican. Last time you guys ran in 2018, George won by 77 votes. And before everything was counted, was it the absentees, he was actually ahead? Or do I have that history wrong?
Well, by my account, you know, we go to all the polling locations and we grab the tally sheet. So I had that I was up from the very beginning, even from that night. So it wasn't a huge surprise, you know, that I was ahead, because my numbers had me ahead, not by a lot. You know,
just did your numbers include absentee ballots?
Yes, they did. Yeah,
they declared victory. He went to a victor's lunch the next day at the Capitol and then heard that he lost. Was that because that was before ABs? Did you beat him on ABs? Did he win at the polls?
Well, we totaled all of the tally sheets, you know, and so what happened was someone made sort of a transposition error, if you will, in one of the towns. So instead of like instead of like two absentee ballots from one district in Ansonia, it was like 200
for him.
Yeah, exactly. We knew that was odd because there's only like, you know, there may be 400 total in the whole district, that part of Ansonia. So we were able to, you know, analyze it and say, hey, wait a minute, something's not right here. You better go double check that. And
that was a nail biter.
Yeah, for sure.
So now you're running again. What did you take from that election, Senator Logan? Did you have any course corrections, or did you say, boy, it came close, I'm the incumbent? Or did you say, gee, it's a tough issue. It was an anti-Trump year. So, I mean, you did pretty well because that Republicans got creamed statewide that year. Was there a lesson in that close race for you?
Well, you know, the district itself, you know, had been held by a Democrat, right, for over 24 years. Mm-hmm. So we know that it's always going to be a tough go for a Republican in this district. However, you know, I don't really run for party. I run for the people of the district. So, you know, I go to events. I listen to what people have to say.
You're everywhere.
Yeah, so I stick to the
issues.
I mean,
if anyone ever goes to your Instagram, they will see somebody who is omnipresent. You're just about every diner and community gathering in the American Legion Hall, from Ansonia to Derby to Woodbridge to Hamden. So it's been said, Senator Logan, that there are no more local elections, though. That in the last bunch of years, as the nation's become more partisan and more of a fixation, especially since Donald Trump's gotten in, but even before as president, that so many local elections now are tribal. People who identify themselves nationally with a party or a politician, And we saw some of that for sure statewide in 2018 when there was a big vote. You know, Ned Lamont was running as a Democrat after a Democratic governor was highly unpopular. He was not an exciting candidate. And it was pretty generally believed that it was an anti-Trump vote that got him in and got the Democrats suddenly a big margin of a majority in the Senate. Do you face that? Have you seen that difference?
Well, you know, I don't get involved in national politics much, but certainly whenever you have an incumbent, the midterm elections usually don't fare well for the incumbent present first party, right? Same thing happened to Obama. He had the House and the Senate in 2008, and in 2010, he lost, I believe, the Senate. So something similar happened under the current president as well. But as far as locally is concerned, I mean, there's over 40% of all the registered voters in my district are unaffiliated with any party. That's what gave me the sort of impetus or drive, you know, to go for it. I said, wait a minute. You know, it's not just Republicans and Democrats. There are all these independent voters and unaffiliated voters. So I, you know, go to the districts, go to different towns, see what the messages are that folks are you know, want to hear in terms of what their issues are. And I stick to, you know, the themes, the messages that the people in the district are concerned about. And that's what's helped me. You know, I've never voted, you know, strict party lines. I always vote for the candidate. And I look at the candidate and what he or she stands for. So I try to do my best to represent the people of the district. And, you know, it was a tough election, but we did win. And I did make some adjustments as well. And that's
what kind of adjustments?
Even more accessibility to the folks.
But that was not an issue. I mean, no one said, George, we don't see you.
No, well, you know, almost, you know, half the folks voted for me and half didn't, right? So obviously I needed to do a little bit more in terms of hearing what, you know, the message was that those folks that didn't vote for me wanted to hear. And I still think it's an issue of accessibility because I'm telling you, I'm knocking on doors. And even with all the coffee hours, going to all the events, I'd say probably one out of every three homes still have no idea, you know, who I am. People are focused on working, raising their families, paying their bills, you know, and a lot of, you know, we in the media and in the, you know, you in the media and us in the political realm, this is like our
we
our
forget
world.
We're weenies.
Yeah.
So how many voters are there in your district?
Well, you know, it varies, but somewhere to the order of around 55,000, something in that realm.
So there's no way that even someone who's living in every waking hour going to events, knock doors, you're not going to meet 55,000 people.
That is correct.
That's
that
your point.
Correct.
Oh, so you can have more accessibility. So was I wrong outside the district as seeing the last election as purely a Trump, anti-Trump referendum?
Well, you know, again, I'm not an expert on you know, political
don't
national
don't duck out.
Agenda.
You know more about politics than I do when you live in that district.
No, but again, we did win. So it, I don't know. You're going to say that's affected the president, but
so
we did
looking
win.
Ahead, in addition to course correct adjustments, what are the key differences between you and your opponent? What are some of the issues where you have different views?
Well, I mean, first of all, we definitely have different views as far as you and I, because I don't know who my opponent is yet. I know that...
Cabrera wants to run again.
Right. But there are, I've heard that there's others as well. There's even a kickoff party for another one next week.
Who's
you know?
That?
I forget. He's in Hamden. Yeah, local fellow. So, and there are probably more. Last go around, there was three. So
that's right. They had a hard fought.
Right. So,
okay. So about you and Democrats.
Yes.
You are against tolls.
Yes, absolutely against tolls. Yeah.
And you're, what about the minimum wage? Were you for or against that rise?
$15? Well,
is that over now?
It is over. I want to raise everyone's wages, right? So it's not a matter of that I don't want to raise people's wages, but there's a couple ways of doing it. Either do it, one, by trying to artificially raise the wages, our minimum wage, which we already are well over the federal minimum wage. Or you try to improve the economy so that you have more people working, you have employers competing for workers, and you raise wages that way. You know, they raise minimum wage to $15 an hour. I'd like to see somebody live on $15 an hour as well. So that's not really the answer to giving someone a livable wage.
So how do we make it so that there are more jobs and more people working?
Right. We have to do more in the state to improve our fiscal health, to improve our economy. And we do that by not raising taxes, making Connecticut more affordable for families and people to live in, and make Connecticut a state where businesses want to stay, they want to expand, right? Invest in their company, hire more people. But the way we've been going now with tax increases on families, individuals, on companies, regulations that's making it more expensive for businesses to do work here, we've got more and more companies leaving the state. Connecticut is less attractive for new businesses to come in. And as a result, we have less and less people paying more and more, shouldering more and more of the tax burden. I want more people living in Connecticut, working in Connecticut, paying taxes. And that, in my opinion, is the only sustainable way of getting Connecticut out of this financial disaster. That
George Logan, State Senator, 17th District here in Dateline, New Haven, WNHH-FM, live stream, newhavenindependent.org. Governor Lamont has put us on a debt diet. He's doing a lot less borrowing than we used to have for local projects. And he has also gotten rid of the First Five program, where you got a lot of tax breaks to get larger employers, saying we're focused on smaller employers, a smaller pie of incentives, and tying them more to results before they get the money. A, is that an accurate way they're putting out of how they've made the change? And B, how do you feel about it?
Well, you know, to me, it's kind of a fake debt diet. He's actually, what he's done, he's held hostage a lot of the funding for the communities because of tolls. You know, he's kind of saying, hey, you know, let's vote on this tolls, give me my tolls, and I'll start releasing some money to the community.
But he's still not going back to previous levels. He said he would open the tap a little bit in key districts of legislators so he can get the thing passed.
Well, part of the reason he can't go back to previous levels because, and you know, a couple years ago, we set a bonding cap. So there's a cap on where he can go. So he's certainly not going to go beyond that because by statute, he's unable to, you know, to do that. But even look at tolls, you know, you talk about tolls. What's going to happen once tolls are approved? We're going to borrow a whole boatload of money, right? And then the projected tolls revenues, future toll revenues, are going to pay back those loans.
So how do we pay or do we not pay to upgrade our public transit system, to upgrade our roads, to update our bridges, upgrade the train tracks so it doesn't take longer to go to New York than it did 40 years ago?
Sure.
How do we do it without tolls?
Right. So I get that a lot. So first of all, remember, tolls isn't going to pay for all that you just described. Right.
Right. Not the way he has it now with only trucks when he had cars.
Right. Even when he had cars, it was only going to be about 15% of the total funding that was required for our transportation plan, his $20 billion transportation plan that he had previously. And so, you know, tolls isn't the be all to end all. We need to utilize the money that we're already collecting for transportation on transportation, right? We've got a special transportation fund. We keep rating the special
transportation. Is there enough in it for the repairs we need? Do you agree we need a $20 billion?
Over 10 years, I think that's a good amount. I think the Connecticut Republicans came up with a $19 billion plan, but you know, in the ballpark. Is it enough? I think yes, if we have a good plan and we prioritize where we're going to fix our roads. But remember, it's not just tolls. It's not just the taxes that we're paying. We're also getting money subsidized from the federal government. We're getting over approximately $720 million a year from the federal government. So all that comes into comes into play. In addition to that, there are other means as well. For example, the Connecticut Republicans came up with a plan to utilize some of the money from the rainy day fund. Not all of it. We're at record.
Now, why would a fiscally conservative party want to raid the rainy day fund? The Wall Street Journal and rating agencies have praised Connecticut in the last year for getting its fiscal house in order, they claim, partly because we have a robust rainy day fund above the actuarially recommended minimum. So why would you want to dip there?
Right. So first you hit the hill on the point above the recommended actuarially minimum, right? So we're above that. And it's not a rating of the fund. When you hear rating of the rainy day fund,
that's if you don't want the money.
That assumes you're taking all the money out.
Right. If you don't want it. Right. But if you don't want to take it from there, then you call it a raid.
No, right. So if you've got over $3.5 billion, right, you know, we're at record levels, right? And we're talking about taking $1.2 billion out, right? What we're going to do with that is that we're not going to take that $1.2 billion and put it directly to fixing roads and bridges. We're going to utilize that money to pay
borrow.
Down. No.
Oh, to pay down the deficit.
The deficit. So our debt is so high. Imagine if you have credit cards at home, right? You have short-term credit cards and you're paying, you know, I don't know, I'm just making up some number, $10,000 worth of debt. And you take a chunk of money and you pay it towards the principal, right? Now your monthly expense, your minimum monthly expense is less.
So you're saying you would take the savings, what we pay in interest because our debt is so high, and use that toward the, and how much of a year is that?
At over $125 million. And that's sustainable into the future. And the rainy day fund is projected to replenish itself within 2 years. We'll be back at the levels.
Unless we hit a recession.
And even then, we're already, again, above the actuarially recommended minimum.
Okay, and we're on the actuarially recommended Dateline New Haven, WNHH-FM.
I love it.
103.5, livestream, newhavenindependent.org, with State Senator George Logan. How about George Kerber, if he runs against you, a couple of issues he's different from you on. It's public option. He thinks the government should offer a low-cost medical plan to everyone who doesn't have insurance now to help cover the uninsured. Are you do you agree with creating a public option plan?
So we certainly need to work towards doing something to fix our healthcare crisis, right? The healthcare problem we have is on the federal level. It is a federal, major federal issue. It's got to be fixed on a federal level. That being said, I am all for Connecticut doing what we can to make sure that folks don't see a reduction in the coverage that they have now. And we do need to do more to make it affordable for folks who are having a hard time paying for their healthcare. However, the public option that the Lamont administration is pushing with the Comptroller Kevin Lembo would create an insurance company, an insurance plan that would go in direct competition with the private insurance companies.
I love that, because the private insurance companies skin us alive.
But here's the problem with that. The private insurance companies have a set of regulations that they have to follow. The government doesn't have the same, they don't have to worry about the same types of issues. So it's an unfair advantage for the government. But what's going to happen there? What's going to happen there if we damage or destroy the private healthcare market here in Connecticut? All costs are going to go up. We certainly can't afford to put.
So what's the alternative?
We can't afford to put. We work with the private insurance companies, which is happening now because of the threat of this public option. Work with the private insurance companies to make sure that they do more to come up with plans that folks, particularly those that are economically disadvantaged, can afford to pay.
But we don't like those low coverage plans, right? It's the part of the answer that's been floated as an alternative is that. Make it cheap, but then you find out if you're really sick, like you got cancer, sorry, too bad, you don't have insurance anymore.
So you probably know I'm on the Griffin Hospital Board of Directors, right? Mm-hmm. So I've been on there for over 10 years, and the wave for healthcare is preventative care, right? We want to keep people healthy and not just wait to treat people when they're ill and when they're sick. So that's kind of the way forward that we're going now, and I'm all for that, all in for that as well. And I also believe that we should do more for folks in Connecticut in terms of wellness programs to keep folks healthy, in terms of nutrition, in terms of regular checkups to, you know, to catch potential issues or diseases earlier than later. But the public option is doomed for failure. It's not going to work. And again, that's going back to this idea that we can just give things away. There's nothing to give away here. If we were to do something like that, more and more people would go on this public option, and it means more taxes would be raised. And the government, of all the things that we've messed up in terms of trying to run, the last we want to do is now put health insurance on the back of the Connecticut state.
I guess where I see it differently is I feel like there is no bigger failure than the private insurance industry, that their whole model is to not cover you for things you paid for.
Well, again, the push has to be
from a different place.
The push has to improve them, right? And if we don't, then I think that's where we hit them in terms of penalties. We hit them in terms of showing them that if they don't, these types of ideas are going to spring up more and more, and they're better off working with us, compromising with us. That's why leadership is so important at the state level. Our governor Lamont, someone who I like, you know, personally. I think he needs to do more in terms of being a leader and working with the healthcare industry, particularly here in Connecticut. Remember, we're the insurance capital of the world at one time, right? Okay. So it's still a major part of our economy here. We have tens of thousands of folks working with here. We need to do more working with the private insurance companies here.
What about on criminal justice? What about bail reform, bond reform, getting rid of cash bail except for violent people? We say that poor, basically right now, if you're poor, you can't have bond, then you're going to spend time in jail or pre-detention, trial detention.
Yeah, I am absolutely in favor of bail reform and looking at bail reform. I mean, to me, it's one of those things that state government does, and we should look at it at a regular basis. Folks that are economically disadvantaged, that are poor, indigent, should not be at a huge disadvantage, for spending lots of time incarcerated if they can't afford it. So I'm actually all for it. However, remember, I never support or approve a bill just because of the title. Right? The details matter. So we have to look at the details and to make sure that it's actually going to help the very people that any bill that comes out is actually intended to help.
What about ICE in the courthouse, Immigration Customs Enforcement? Now they've been upset with Connecticut because we have a lot of protections in place for immigrants who come to state court, and then the agents get stopped. They came Derby in your district and there was a standoff and they left without the guy, and they've been getting pretty mad, the ICE. Where do you stand on that one?
Yeah, so I do think it's going a little too far to go into courthouses and grab folks that are in the courthouse to take care of a lot of the very issues that ICE is complaining or using as a rationale for coming. For example, if folks are contesting or a ticket or a charge, we should at least let them go through that process to see if they're innocent or guilty.
So you're okay with them not being in the courthouse?
I'm okay with them not being in a courthouse. However, I'm not okay with state government, local police not working with the federal immigration authorities. I think that's a ridiculous.
So they should respect the detainers.
Excuse me?
They should tell ICE if they're looking for someone where someone is.
I do. I absolutely do. And the issue though, if we don't do that, if the local police does not work with the federal government on immigration, do you think the federal government is just going to say, okay, we're just going to ignore that federal law? I gave a big speech on the Senate floor about this. What's going to happen if in Connecticut or throughout the country, local police stops working with the federal government, whether it's the FBI, the CIA, or whether it's immigration? What's going to happen, and which you have seen in other countries, you're going to have what's going to be created is called a federal police force. And the last thing we want here in Connecticut is a federal police force coming in to impose and to see through the laws of the federal government. If you Google and you take a look now, right now the federal government is going into southern border or towns and taking up the role that normally local police would take up, looking for undocumented persons. That is the wave that's going to happen if the local government, local police do not work with our federal law enforcement agencies.
Okay, we're running out of time. What's your top priority this session?
My top priority is the fiscal health of the state of Connecticut, making Connecticut more affordable for folks.
So some specifics, what are you hoping to pass?
Well, one, I want to fight against any proposed tax increases. I'm also pushing for more funding for education in our communities, in all our communities, but particularly Hamden, Ansonia, Naugatuck. I'm also working on rail, the Waterbury to Bridgeport, the Waterbury rail line is a very big issue.
What are you trying to do?
Well, we are looking for additional rail cars so that we can get more ridership up. There's a Naugatuck hub that Mayor Hess in Naugatuck is pushing as well. Again, to help with economic development, which I think will improve the lives for folks throughout the state.
All right. Well, George Logan, thank you for coming. I'm sorry the time went so fast. You brought your axe. State Senator George Logan, 17th District, has brought his guitar. I'm going to back him up on rhythm. And thanks for listening to Dateline New Haven. Give us 2 seconds and we'll get started.
Which key?
E?
All right.
Thank you for joining us today on Dateline New Haven. Okay,
was fun.
You are listening to Jazz Haven here at 103.5 FM WNHH, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven and streaming at newhavenindependent.org. You got Stan the Man and Jazz.
Right now, we'd like to conclude our first set with a fast-paced tune of Brian Paul, Stepping Stones.